Great to be with you. Thanks, Steve. For anybody who doesn't know me, I know most people. I think we'll probably know about half the people here. But my wife and I moved over from York 25 years ago to come to Salford University. I came to Salford University, and Mount Chapel was the first place we came. We were going to do Eden Project, and then there was no space on Eden here. So we ended up going to another church in South Manchester. Anyway, as things worked out, my wife, her dad was killed in a road traffic accident, and he was only 44, and it kind of understandably shook us quite a lot as a family, and we spent a lot of time back in York, back and forth, and then we decided to come back to Mount Chapel. And Mount Chapel, talking about being Father's Day, Mount Chapel was a place where we found mothers and fathers, in fact, particularly a father in John Ogden for my wife and for myself, but for others as well, many, many people. Well, you became our family, and it became a place of healing for us, that so it has such a special place in our hearts. We stayed for about 10 years, and then and a job opportunity came up to be a worship coordinator, and I was a musician, and I was a music teacher as well, and I really felt God was calling me to do that. So I left. We left 14 years ago, and down to Salford Eden, just down the road, to take up a part-time job as a worship coordinator. My four children came with me, and they didn't want to come. They were going, why can't we go back to Mount Chapel, for a long, long time? But they're here again today, and it's great to be with you. So we have such fond memories of this place. It's always got a special place in our heart, and we will be forever grateful for God putting you in our lives. Today, we're looking at the power of integrity. Genesis chapter 39. I've actually gone on a couple more verses than Steve actually gave me, so I've been a bit naughty, but it'll become clear why I've done that. Who are you when nobody is watching? Who are you when nobody is watching you? Are you the same in public as you are in private? Are you a person of integrity? Today there's probably less trust in our institutions than ever before, really. The police, the fire, the government, the educational establishments, charities, even the church. Probably less trust in those organisations than ever before. And there's been so many high-profile examples of abuse of position, hasn't there, and institutional immorality, affairs, financial mismanagement, coercive leadership, abuse, both inside and outside the church. It's incredibly sad. I don't know whether you saw it last week or the last couple of weeks, but anybody heard of the band DC Talk back in the day? Yeah? Anybody hear of the sad news about what the ex-lead singer? Okay, well, sorry, it's going to be good news as well today, but I'm starting with some really bad news. So Michael Tate, he was a singer for DC Talk, one of the first Christian bands I'd ever heard when I became a Christian. They were a brilliant band. And then when that band disbanded, he joined another band called Newsboys. You might have heard of those, Christian band. Yeah, you heard of them? Yeah? Brilliant. This is going to be a shock to you then. Sorry, just brace yourself. He left the band recently, and nobody really knew why. And then reports came out of alleged abuse. And he, this week, basically made a confession on social media, on Instagram, because obviously that's the best place to do it. And he said this: recent reports of my reckless and destructive behaviour, including drug and alcohol abuse and sexual activity, are sadly largely true, Tate wrote on Instagram. For some two decades, I used and abused cocaine, consumed far too much alcohol, and at times touched men in an unwanted sensual way. I'm ashamed of my life choices and actions and make no excuses for them. I will simply call it what God calls it, sin. I don't blame anyone else but myself. While I might dispute certain details and the accusations against me, I do not dispute the substance of them. I'm ashamed to admit that for years I've lied and deceived my family, friends, fans, and even misled my bandmates about aspects of my life. I was, for the most part, living two distinctly different lives. I was not the same person on stage Sunday night that I was at home on Monday. I was violating everything I was raised to believe by my God-fearing dad and mum about walking with Jesus, and was grieving the very God I loved and sang about for the most of my life. And I just thought it was just yet another high profile, sad example of somebody who essentially was living a double life. They weren't a person of integrity. They were one place, they were one person in one place and another person in another place. And it came back to have very dire circumstances and consequences, much of whom, which will come out, I'm sure, in the days and weeks ahead. I'm sorry if that was a shock to you. It was for me as well. But it seemed to be very relevant to what I'm going to talk about today, because I want to talk about integrity, about being the same in every place you are, being consistent, that quality of being consistently true to what you believe and say and your principles. And it seems to be rarer and rarer in today's society. Today we're looking at a place, a story set in a high government. So it's a place of power, it's a place of privilege, and it's a place where the difference of one person with real integrity is shown. So let's read it. I'm going to put it on the screen if anybody wants to read from the screen, but if you've got your own Bible, it's from Genesis 39, verses 1 to 20. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of the Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household and entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, "My master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he's entrusted to my care. No one's greater in his house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were there. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. And when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him again, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in all he did. So, the biblical context. Joseph is a young Jewish man. They think he's about 17 when he was sold into slavery. He's not even an adult yet. We know from the earlier stories he seemed to be quite arrogant. God had given him these dreams about how he was better than his brothers, and also his dad had told him he was basically his favourite son. So that wasn't a great combination. He was sold into slavery by his jealous brothers, and he's taken to Egypt, sold to a high official, this guy called Potiphar, and he's the captain of the guard. He's the top guy in the army, and he must have been scared to death. Try and imagine it. Still a child, 17 years old, taken from your country by people you had no idea of, you don't know the language, you don't know the culture, miles away from your family. You've gone from being the favourite son in your father's house to a slave in somebody else's. You've no idea what's going to happen to you, whether you're going to be killed, abused, anything. Imagine that, 17 years old, how disorientating that must have been for him. The question I've got is, have you ever been in a situation you wouldn't have chosen and you resented? Perhaps it was a job you hated. Ever been in a job you hated? I've been there. It's pretty horrible, isn't it? A boss you didn't like. Anybody ever had that boss you like? Yep, I've been there. It's not very good, is it? A relationship that drained you. Don't look at the person next to you. A relationship that really drained you. Took it all out of you. A neighbourhood you didn't want to live in. We've been there. We were in Tenerife Street for many years. And that was an interesting place down in Lower Broughton. As many of you know, because the first house group we had there, Steve and Helen's granddad's car, I think it was, a Nissan Micra. Your mum's car, wasn't your granddad's? It was Joy's car. It was stolen outside the house. We heard it being joy-ridden around the back. And everybody's going, what's that noise? And we said, don't worry about it. It happens every week. We get at least one or two. Somebody's nicked it, driving around around the back, and then they'll probably burn it. We looked out. It was Joy's car. Do worry about it. It's my car. The next month, exactly the same thing happened again. Andy and Nikki Kellum, who used to be here as well, her granddad's, late granddad's car, another Nissan Micra. I don't know what it is about Micras. Maybe they're very easy to steal. I've never tried it. Anybody tried it? No? Okay. Good. Nissan Micra, same thing again. Nicked, joy-ridden, burnt out. So we've been in a place we didn't really want to live. You wouldn't have chosen it, and you resented it. How do you make sense of it? Why has God allowed this to happen to you? And what good could possibly come out of this situation? How could you possibly serve God in these situations when it's so far from the ideal? Perhaps you've been in that situation. Maybe you're in it right now. And as I look around and I think about Mount Chapel, without putting too fine a point in it, I imagine for many of you as a church, you think, we didn't anticipate being where we are right now. And it's not what we would have chosen. How can we make sense of it? What's God doing here? Has he finished with us? We know the answer is no. How we react to situations like that reveal far more about us and our faith than the situations we enjoy and find easy. And I'm absolutely astounded how Joseph responds to his dire circumstances. The first thing the text says about him is that he prospered. How does a slave prosper? He's a slave. What did he look like? The text doesn't tell us. What does this prosperous outcome look like? Maybe he just built really good relationships with the other slaves and with the other people of the household. Maybe he started to manage some of the finances and Potiphar could see, wow, he's actually really good with numbers. Maybe we can give him more. Perhaps he could get the best out of people around him. Maybe he could get the best out of the servants that were there in a way that Potiphar and his other attendants couldn't do it. But whatever Joseph did, whatever was in front of him, he did to the best of his ability. In situations where we absolutely wouldn't have chosen it and we resent it, it's so tempting to just do the bare minimum to survive. Just get your head down, just get through it until we can get past this stage so that then we can get to something we really want to do. And that wasn't Joseph's approach. He prospered. He did everything in front of him to the best of his ability. And the next thing the author tells us is that his master saw that the Lord was with him. And he gave him success in all he did. Think about that for a minute. His master, who's a foreign Egyptian captain of the guard, doesn't know God, doesn't know Joseph's God anyway, doesn't know Yahweh, saw that God was with Joseph. What did he see? What did he see and recognize? How did he recognize God in Joseph? What were the signs of his success? Again, as a slave, what does success look like? It's very hard to imagine when you're in an alien context and a situation you don't choose or expect. What does success look like? There's no indication that Joseph did anything spectacular. He simply made the very best out of the situation, and in doing so, people saw that God was with him. And I think that's powerful. He could have just done the bare minimum to survive, or he could have done what I did at times when I was in a job I didn't like. He could have sulked. He could have become resentful. He could have been moody. He could have sent managers really angry emails about things that he thought were not very fair or good. I did that. He could have sabotaged Potiphar's house, couldn't he? Could have gone, well, while I'm here, I'm going to sabotage this place because I shouldn't be here. This is not fair. This is unjust. He could have abused his position, but instead he did the exact opposite. He worked hard. And he was a person of integrity. I'm astounded, a 17-year-old with the integrity that Joseph shows. He refused to let his circumstances reduce the size of his world or the size of God or the size of his character. He worked, as the Apostle Paul said in Colossians 3, to borrow his phrase, he worked as if he was working for the Lord. He didn't work as if he was working for Potiphar. He worked as if he was working for the Lord, not man. Do you ever question your ability to be a good witness in your workplace or your family or your street? Have you ever felt like that? Ever struggled that to think, actually, am I a good witness? Do you ever struggle to believe that others might actually see something of God in you? Gone, well, what? I'm not different. What? I'm nothing special. What have I done? Like, how are they going to see God in me? Do you ever question that? I know I do at times. You may never accomplish anything incredible, but you can be sure that if you're walking with God in integrity, people will see it. There's a power in the witness of a person who gives 100% for the Lord, especially in difficult circumstances. You see, success in God's eyes is pleasing Him when nobody is watching, as well as when they are. That's integrity. When nobody's watching, is God pleased with you? Can you say, hand on heart, I'm doing this for you, Lord? Are you being the same person both in public and in private? Are you consistent? Nikki Gumbel tells a great story. I used to tell in the early iterations of the Alpha course about Selfridges, the high street chain. And I'll just quote it because he can tell it better than I could. He says this: I once knew a godly man named Gibbo, who, when he was young, worked as a clerk at Selfridges, the London department store. One day, when the owner, Gordon Selfridge, was there, the telephone rang and Gibbo answered it. The caller asked to speak to Gordon Selfridge. Gibbo passed on the message and Selfridge replied, "Tell him I'm out." Gibbo held out the receiver to him and said, "You tell him." Gordon Selfridge took the call, but he was absolutely furious. And Gibbo said to him afterwards, "If I can lie for you, I can lie to you, and I never will." And from that moment on, Gordon Selfridge had the highest regard for and trust in Gibbo. One simple act of integrity: I'm not going to lie for you, because if I can lie for you, I can lie to you, and you don't want me to lie to you. He could be trusted. It's a great story, isn't it? Joseph found favour in Potiphar's eyes, and it resulted in being given greater responsibility. And we know from Jesus' teaching that that's a biblical principle. But Jesus echoes the parable of the talents, and he says God gives you talents and he gives you personality, he gives you experience, he gives you what he gives you, and if you use it for his glory and you use it wisely, he'll give you more, he'll give you greater responsibility. And that is what happened, we see in Joseph's life. But then comes something even more remarkable. Because of Joseph's integrity and witness, not only was Joseph blessed by God, not only was he successful, not only was he given more responsibility, but we read that Potiphar was blessed by God. Potiphar was blessed by God. Isn't that pretty incredible? This pagan, foreign guy who had no regard for God, who had slaves and all the rest of it, probably did all sorts of, you know, things that we would and God would not think was good. He became blessed. Why? Because of Joseph. Joseph was blessed, but he brought blessing to others around him. And we hear echoes of Abraham, wasn't it? Where God says to Abraham, and he says, "I'm going to make you a blessing so that you'll be a blessing to all nations." It's a great principle. If we're blessed by God, we will be a blessing to other people. I don't know if you've ever considered it, but just by being in the places where you are, which for you, there's only you that can be there. You're in an absolute unique position that wherever you are in your life and wherever you go in the environments you go to, there's nobody else like you there. There may not be any other Christians there as well. And just by you being there, being a person of integrity, being blessed by God, being used by God, God blesses others through you. I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but I think that's a really powerful thought. Just by being in a place, other people, even if they have no concept of the Christian faith, even if they have no relationship with God, they can be blessed through you. I think that's a powerful, powerful thing. We can be like the conduits through whom God's blessing flows. But then comes a twist. There's always a twist in a great story. Potiphar's wife wants to sleep with him. Joseph, it says, it's very similar to how David's described. He's ruddy and handsome. He's a young guy. He's well built. He's good looking. And Potiphar's wife notices him. And she thinks, "I want a bit of that." I'm paraphrasing, obviously. He's a great guy. He's got integrity. He's good looking. He's well built. He's a bit like me. But then, and there's fruit in his life. and then he faces this strong temptation. How often does that happen? Things are going really well, and we're seeing God at work in our lives and people around us, and there's suddenly a strong challenge, a strong temptation, or a strong opposition comes. Satan doesn't want us to be a blessing. He doesn't want us to be blessed or to be a blessing. If he can't tempt you to be lazy or greedy or self-pitying, as would have been really, really tempting for Joseph, well, then he'll try something else. And in this case, he tries sexual temptation. Many unmarried men, young men, would have found the persistent advances of an attractive and powerful woman very difficult to resist. Many married men would probably find that very difficult too. He could have easily abused his position. Nobody would have known. But again, a young guy, Joseph, shows incredible integrity and self-control. He recognizes that to sin against another person made in God's image, in this case Potiphar, he's made in God's image even though he doesn't know God, is to sin against God himself. It's a theme that David picks up in Psalm 51 when he's just committed adultery. Do you remember the story of Bathsheba? And then he has her husband killed in war. And he says, "Against you, Lord, have I committed sin." Which goes, no, you didn't, David. You did it against this guy and Bathsheba. But he recognizes a very powerful principle that to sin against somebody else made in the image of God, even if they don't know God, you are sinning against God. It's powerful. It's important. It's serious. And Joseph did what we should all do when we're faced with a strong temptation. He refused to even be with her. He said, "Not only am I going to say no to you, but I'm actually not even going to be in the same room as you." And I think that's a really good principle for us today. If you're faced with a particular temptation or a strong challenge, spend less time there. I mean, it seems obvious, doesn't it? Spend less time there. If it's your computer that causes you to sin, and Jesus would say, "Gouge it," causes you to sin, gouge it out. And he's like, it's so serious that just get yourself out of there. Do everything you can so that you can remove even the temptation. If it's your computer that causes you to sin, turn it off. If it's your phone, spend less time on your phone. If it's your TV, if it's your fridge, if it's your store cupboard, if it's the off license, whatever it is, if it's been around a particular group of friends, if it's been in a particular presence of a particular person, spend less time with them. Don't even refuse to even be with them. Unfortunately, though, there are some scenarios we can't escape. And Joseph couldn't escape this one, could he? He's a slave. Where's he going to go? He's living and working in the same house as Potiphar's wife. So when you can't change your situation or those other people around you, what do? The only thing you can do is change yourself and how you respond. And sometimes our integrity lands into trouble, doesn't it? Being in trouble is not always a sign that you've done something wrong. Sometimes it's the exact opposite. I remember in my first teaching job, I became a teacher when I was about 24. And I just presumed that teachers always told the truth. I don't know why, because I just think it's a respectable job. You think, these guys, you know, they've got integrity, they'll just always tell the truth. And I go in naively, and the first year, I couldn't believe the lack of integrity in college, when I was in a college. The lies that teachers would tell and managers would tell to make the institution look good, to improve results, to attract more funding, to keep Ofsted at bay. I was astounded. And it was not even a blink of an eye. It was just done without even thinking about it. It was just accepted. There were any little white lies. Nobody will ever know. It's all right. Everybody looks good. The students look good. The college looks good. We get more money. Ofsted's off our back, etc. I couldn't believe it. And we got towards the end of my first year of teaching, and an awarding body was coming in to check that the quality of what we were delivering was good. And I was really naive. I didn't know what to do really. First year was such a steep learning curve. You don't know what you're doing. And they said, "Oh yeah, well, you're meant to have externally verified the work and the marking of every piece of work. And everybody's meant to double mark it, and you're meant to check that I'm marking fairly next to my colleague. He's not marking too harshly or too favourably." And we'd not done enough of it, basically. We just didn't have the time to do it. And I didn't even know we had to do it. So I was a bit naive. I didn't even know. And they were like, "Well, it's all right. We'll just sign the forms to get the paperwork done. It looks like we've done it." And I'm like, "Yeah, but we haven't done it." "Yeah, but do you?" And then the pressure was, "Well, do you realise what would happen if you told them that you hadn't done it, the whole qualification is going to be in jeopardy. These students who you love and you've spent all your year working towards, they might not get their qualifications. In fact, they might not be able to do it at all because the whole thing is going to be in uproar. And so, to my shame, I decided to go along with it. And I felt so horrible that I'd lied, that I'd broken my own values. I'd broken my own commitment to God and to telling the truth. And it was horrible. And that experience really, really sort of struck me. And I thought, I'm not going to do this again. I don't care what happens, I'm not going to do it again. I've done it once, I'm not doing it again. And the interesting thing was, when I decided to do that, I got in more trouble. People stopped liking me because of it. It made more work for everybody else, because when somebody came in, my manager's going, yes, but you do that, don't you? And I'm like, no. And then going, yeah, but you might not do it exactly as they said, but you do it though, don't you? I'm like, no, we don't do it, Andy. You know we don't do it. You know? And you know, the amount of trouble that I got in for telling the truth. People seem to prefer the Ian who lied than the Ian who told the truth. Why? One, because it gave them a lot more work to do. But two, I think when we do the right thing, we do the godly thing, in a toxic environment, we expose other people's hypocrisy. We expose their lies. We expose their hypocrisy. And I do wonder now if any of my ex-colleagues look back at that time, they might not do, and see something of God in that decision. God, that person was a person of integrity. But either way, even if they don't, I think God was pleased. And I was thinking again about just how, I don't know, you've heard the term cancel culture, that as soon as there's even an insinuation that somebody's done something wrong that's not morally right, everybody's very quick to judge them and jump on their back and go, well, he must lose his job, she must be cancelled, you cannot be friends with that person, you know, the vitriol, the hatred that comes online with it all as well. The irony is, most of us struggle to live by the same incredibly high standards we set for everybody else. We want everybody else to be perfect, and we're so quick to knock them down when they make a mistake or they do something horrendous, and not defending anybody's actions. But we want to be able to have grace and mercy for ourselves. We want justice for everybody else, but we want grace and mercy for ourselves. We want people to think the best of us while we think the worst of everybody else. We want to be able to go, well, it's all right, I'll just flirt with that attractive woman in the office or that attractive bloke down at in the supermarket. Nobody will know. But if we hear of somebody else doing it, well, that's a bit out of order, isn't it? You know, we want to take a little bit of surplus from the stock room. You know, maybe so it's only a bit stationary. You know, I'm not going to miss it. Everybody does it. Maybe we want to keep a little bit back from the tax man. We don't want to declare all of our earnings. We'll just keep a little bit back. Everybody does it. I mean, you know, tax is so high. It's just everybody does it. Maybe we just want to talk unkindly about other people behind their backs, but we would hate the thought that they were doing it about us. It's a paradox at the core of every human heart. It's the hypocrisy that lurks in every single one of us, Christian or not. And it's the opposite of integrity. Integrity doesn't come naturally to us. Joseph's complete integrity landed him in prison. But we know that wasn't the end of the story, don't we? Lies will never get the last word. Hypocrisy will never win. And chapter 39 ends with an almost identical description of Joseph's influence in prison as it had been in Potiphar's house. This is why I wanted to do the next bit, because it's almost word for word the same. So this is what is at the end of the chapter the author says. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness, granted him favour, put Joseph in charge. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, and he gave him success. Look at what was at the start of the chapter we've already read. The Lord was with him. He gave him success in everything he did. Joseph found favour. Joseph was put in charge. His master didn't concern himself. Look at how similar it is. And when you see that in the Bible, as many of you know, that's not an accident. That's intentional. The author does. When you see repetition, you see patterns, you know the author really wants to ram something home to you. Do not miss it. And I think it's brilliant. It's a greatly, great crafted story. The Lord was with Joseph, and it became obvious to everyone around. And because the Lord was with Joseph, Joseph became successful, even in an incredibly dire situation. And finally, Joseph became a blessing to those around him. He was trusted with responsibility. And those things are the same for you and for me. If you're in a less than ideal situation right now, remember the Lord is with you. That can sound really trite, can't it? Well, God's with you, but He is. He's with you. He's not left you. It's not a sign that He's left you. He's with you. Maintain your integrity. Work and serve as if you're serving God Himself. Why? Because you are. You are serving God Himself. Whatever you're doing, you're serving God, whether people are watching or not. And if your integrity lands you in trouble, as it did at times with me, you're in good company. He got Joseph in trouble, and he got Jesus crucified. But evil will never get the last word. Ultimately, you will be a blessing. People will trust you. And most importantly, God will be pleased with you, whether people like you or not. I'm coming into land now. This is the end. And as I was reading the story and coming to conclusions, I heard the echo of 1 Peter chapter 2. So I thought it would be a good place to leave this. I've just picked some of the verses out of there. It's not the full passage. Peter writes this 1500 years later, at least, than Genesis, but it's so relevant to Joseph's story and to us today. Peter says this to the early Christians: live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us. For it's by God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in His steps. He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in His mouth. Joseph wasn't perfect, we know that, but he did model something for us. In fact, Joseph became a shadow, a foreshadow of Jesus Himself, the only human being who had ever, in the history of human beings, who had complete integrity, complete consistency, 100% of the time. May we follow in His footsteps this week. Yeah? Amen? Let me pray, and then we'll finish. Father, thank You for this incredible story that is for Your word, Lord, that is like a mirror to us, Lord. As we read it, we see ourselves and we see the world as it really is. We see the human heart as it really is. We're thankful, Lord, that cultures may change, some of the stories and the details change, but actually humans don't change at all. Thousands of years on, we're still the same. We still face the same challenges, the same temptations. And we still have the same opportunity to be a blessing. Lord, if it were left to us, what could we give? We'd have nothing to offer. But because of Your Spirit in us, we have everything to offer. We have Your life, Your hope, Your joy, Your integrity, Your beauty. And Lord, we dare to believe that today, no matter where we're at, no matter what situation we find ourselves in today, that we can be a blessing in Your name. I pray, Lord, that You will help us to be people of integrity, people that are consistent, that we stand up and stand out for You, that we stick to our guns. May our hearts and our words and our deeds, Lord, please You even when nobody sees. And Lord, may people see such something of You in us that they would come to know You and glorify You. May many, many people come into the kingdom, Lord, because of us, because of You in us. We thank You in the name of Jesus today. Amen. Amen. Thank you for listening.